Hi, and welcome to my podcast series, The New Abnormal. I'm Sean P. Lodishenesi from Brand Positive, a research, foresight, and strategy consultancy for corporates, agencies, and NGOs. I've spent 20 years working on catalytic projects around the world, and along the way have been lucky enough to have met some amazing people, from psychologists to activists to creatives, some of whom are guests in this series, along with an array of other fascinating individuals. I'm also the author of The Post-Truth Business, which focused on trust, while my second book, Influencers and Revolutionaries, focused on innovation. My next book will focus on foresight. So, I hope you enjoy this podcast, which is brought to you in partnership with the Copenhagen Institute for Future Studies, a global leader in applying futures thinking to solve strategic challenges within organisations. But now, let me introduce today's guest. So today I'm really pleased to be joined once again by the incredibly interesting Tom Lombardo, PhD, the director of the Center for Future Consciousness. The center offers educational experiences that challenge and stimulate the mind, expand conscious awareness, empower creativity and imagination, deepen knowledge and understanding, and enhance ethical character and promote personal and social growth. What's not to like, as they say? From the point of view of Tom's personal background, it is quite extraordinary. He's Professor Emeritus and retired Faculty Chair of Psychology, Philosophy and the Future at Rio Salado College, Tempe, Arizona. He's an Executive Board Member and Fellow of the World Futures Studies Federation, a national and internationally recognized researcher, writer and speaker. He's published 13 books and over 60 articles. What else can one say? He's a graduate of the University of Connecticut, double major in psychology and philosophy, and University of Minnesota, where he got a PhD in psychology with a minor in philosophy of science, and is a graduate fellow of Cornell University, where he studied ecological psychology with the world-renowned J.J. Gibson. To put it mildly, if you check out his site, which we'll mention later, you'll see his resume actually goes to over 14 pages. As I say, a fascinating figure, an incredibly interesting individual. So, Tom Highender, how are you?
I'm doing well, Sean. Good morning. And it's a warm day in Arizona. It's warming up today. It's going to be like 77 degrees, and it's the winter solstice. So I'm doing fine, and I'll probably take a nice walk later on to get some fresh air and sunshine.
As we're recording this, currently very chilly over here and rather dark, although sort of it's a morning where you are. Just to give an overview of what we'll be going through today. So last time we spoke, Tom, and it was such an interesting conversation. It had loads of really dynamic feedback about it. One of the things you did was to take us through effectively a futures timeline. So I'll just do a very quick 1 minute resume of that. So I thought, again, super interesting. You basically took us back to, I think, about a sort of 1000 BCE with the Sibyls and the Oracles, did a bit of a swift run through past Plato's Republic from the point of view of the utopia of justice. We had a look at those like Cicero and Virgil, moved on through Augustine of Hippo, up to Italian Renaissance, then Copernicus, Nostradamus, up to sort of 17th century, going at high speed, scientific revolution, bit of Francis Bacon, bit of Descartes, Newton, Leibniz, then up to 18th century European Enlightenment, a bit of Industrial Revolution, American Revolution, French Revolution, stop off with the a bit of a viewpoint on Rousseau and the social contract, then going swiftly past Malthus. We then saw Schelling and then Marx and Engels, which I think brings us to a sort of juddering halt in mid-19th century, which from the point of view of today's conversation and the list of absolutely inspiring and informative futures book, which you've put together in clusters, it's going to be, I think, absolutely fascinating to hear you talk us through this. So here we are now. Late 19th century in terms of your list, and I think you're going to kick off with Albert Rubida.
Yes. Let me give a quick explanation of how this list evolved. Sean had asked me to identify around 10 inspiring and memorable, impactive science fiction novels about the future, and to come up with a list of 10. That I'd read over the years. And as I began to create the list, I realized that I had many more than 10 that I wanted to mention. I ended up clustering various novels around certain fundamental themes in science fiction, like cyberpunk and outer space, technology and culture and the singularity. And so the list begins with going back and looking at some of the most memorable and interesting science fiction novels just around the turn of the 19th into the 20th century. And I identified Albert Rabida's The 20th Century, that was the title of his novel, Jules Verne's Paris in the 20th Century, and John Jacob Astor's A Journey in Other Worlds as three very interesting books about the future written by individuals living in the 19th century. And I included those three for a number of reasons, one of them being that it really illustrates how science fiction, even way back then, was about the future of everything and not just simply technology. So Rabida, Jules Verne, and Astor all wrote these very intricate and comprehensive visions of human society in the future, not just technology. The visions that they created were very entertaining and engaging and exceedingly imaginative. I should just mention, in addition, with Rabida, the first great science fiction artist, as well as being one of the most significant French science fiction writers, Rabida produced probably thousands of drawings on his visions of the future. And I'd recommend to anybody, if nothing else, go look at Rabida's drawings and how a man from the end of the 19th century envisioned the future. They're very, very fascinating because they both reflect his own time, and yet in a lot of ways, they're very crazy and way out there. But all three novels are very dramatic and teach us a lot about how people were thinking about the future, oh, roughly 150 years ago. So I included those three to begin with, because I thought they were definitely worth reading so we could see how the future was. Now, any list of science fiction novels has to include one or more novels by H.G. Wells. And the next cluster I have on the list are novels of H.G. Wells, probably the best known science fiction writer ever, because of the popularity of The Time Machine, The War of the Worlds, The Invisible Man, The Island of Dr. Moreau. But even though he's probably the best known science fiction writer ever, he is also probably the most unappreciated and superficially understood science fiction writer ever. Because what usually does not get highlighted or brought up in talking about Wells is that Wells wrote dozens upon dozens of science fiction novels and nonfiction books about the future. Wells was an incredible mind, a very historically educated and informed thinker, who was not only the father of modern science fiction, he was the father of modern future studies. He was the one who articulated the idea back around 1900 that one could develop a scientific discipline to study the future, which eventually evolved into what currently we call future studies. Wells generated an incredible number of different predictions and prescriptions, because Wells had a vision of what would be a preferable future. Now, the ones that I list here are, of course, The Time Machine, but then secondly, The Sleeper Awakes, where he really begins to articulate a host of different social and technological predictions about the future. And then I list up here Men Like Gods, which is another of his science fiction novels, talking about the possible futures of highly evolved humans. And then finally, his incredible synthesis of history and assessment of current affairs and his vision about a preferable future, the shape of things to come. A challenge to read because it's a very intricate and systematic analysis of what's wrong with the world today, how did we get here, and where do we go from here? So when people stop and think about, for example, the challenges and the difficulties facing us today, it'd be a good idea to go back and look at what Wells said 100 years ago almost on what he saw as the challenges facing us then and vision of how we would get to someplace better. Now, I should mention, though, that part of Wells' way of looking at things was that he did not see any way to get from where they were at that time, humanity, to a better reality without that previous reality having to collapse, fall apart, go through a trauma. And the shape of things to come describes a great global war in which human civilization first has to fall apart before it comes back together a different kind of way. And that's an interesting theme that people still think about today. There's no way forward from where we are, except we got to just simply scramble the eggs and make a new omelet because the old one just doesn't gel the correct way. So I included H.G. Wells as a systematic, philosophical thinker, intelligent and inspiring, and wrote, as I said, dozens upon dozens of books about the future, both fiction and nonfiction, including the ones I mentioned.
Mm. Can I just ask there, Tom, that really fascinating point, or one of them you're making there about H.G. Wells and just the incredible impact he had. It's often said, I think, that is about he gave a very famous speech at the BBC suggesting there should be professors of foresight as much as there should be professors of history.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. And in fact, that was something he advocated for. Wells was also, in that regard, a social activist. And he didn't just simply write books. He went out into the political and cultural reality in which he lived and attempted to communicate with world leaders. So Wells actually knew and had conversations with Winston Churchill, with Joseph Stalin, with both Roosevelts, Theodore and Franklin Roosevelt, and other world leaders. In the final analysis, interestingly, Wells was rather frustrated and disappointed regarding the impact he had on global state of affairs. He made an effort, and he got to talk to a lot of very influential people of his era, but in the end, he felt frustrated. In the end, he felt rather pessimistic about the future of humanity, and that his efforts had not come to where he would have hoped they would have gone. A great, great mind, one of the greatest minds of science fiction, and a really prolific writer for 50 years almost.
You mentioned the point about Rabida, in terms of Albert Rabida, and the fact that he was an artist and just created an astonishing array of futuristic imagery linked into, obviously, into his writing. We spoke before, you mentioned other, I mean, extraordinary, back to, way back, you know, 13th century, Roger Bacon, you know, foreseeing cars and helicopters. It's just absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah. Rabida had an intricate imagination, both visually and in his writing. The 20th century, I'd also recommend, because it's literally a narrative that is a slice of life. It is a very comical and entertaining, vision of the lives of a group of people living toward living in the 20th century, and it's filled with lots of right on target prescient predictions, as well as a lot of crazy ideas too about where humanity will be heading in the next 100 years. In particular, his vision that in the 20th century, at least in industrialized nations, humanity would become increasingly stressed out with all its gadgetry. And that's something clearly that he got right on target.
Wow.
It's very comical. The 20th century is very comical.
I know that you want to go on to cosmic features and Olaf Stapleton.
Right. Stapleton, who was a PhD in philosophy and a poet, and was fascinated with Joan of Arc and couldn't figure out what he wanted to do with his life. And he eventually wrote a small number of science fiction novels, which were the most cosmic, expansive science fiction novels probably ever written, including Last and First Men, which traces or speculates on the future of humanity billions of years into the future until humanity eventually dies off, and Star Maker, which in fact speculates on the future of intelligent life in the entire universe 30 billion years into the future. Next to Wells, Stapleton has probably had the biggest influence on the evolution of science fiction, because Stapleton was such a inventive and imaginative thinker who created visions of an immense variety of different future technologies, future aliens, alien civilizations, civilizations at galactic levels, cosmic consciousness. And Stapleton, at the same time, being a philosopher and actually a psychologist too, really got a lot into the topic of how consciousness and the human mind could or should evolve in the future. So a thing to highlight, aside from the fact of the breadth of his visions, a thing to highlight about Stapleton is that he had a focus he threw on where can we go mentally and ethically? Where, not just simply technologically, but how should consciousness and mind evolve as well? And he did it both for humanity and for the universe as a whole, thinking about alien intelligence too. So a place to go look at inventiveness with respect to different kinds of alien civilizations and alien minds is go look at Star Maker. Projects out 30 billion years into the future. Although there have been a few people who have approximated that kind of expansive visioning, Stapleton is the paradigm case of it. Big picture cosmic futures in narrative form. So I include Stapleton's two classics, Star Maker and Last and First Men.
And then what about a very different take on all things futures related? So there's a wonderful piece in the FT put it recently, the greatest contributions to the tradition of dystopian fiction are two defining masterpieces from the 20th century, both of them bestsellers at the time and ever since. Huxley's 1932 Brave New World and then Orwell's 1984. Just for a quick word on that, both begin their books with a short sentence designed to signal a world which was familiar but also disconcertingly futuristic. A squat, yeah, grey building of only 34 stories begins Brave New World. Go on then. So both men were writing warnings. So Huxley, what was he warning us about?
Well, Huxley, I'm going to quote a scholar on this, but Huxley warned of a future in which nobody wanted to read, whereas Orwell warned of a future in which nobody could read. So Brave New World is a world of superficiality, triviality, the senses, bread and circuses, and everybody buying into it within an authoritarian government providing all of the frivolities and pleasures of life, whereas Orwell is a dark vision of the future in which we also have an authoritarian government which represses free thought and pleasure and human individuality. Both of them, in a sense, warn of a future in which individuality gets squashed. But in one case, it gets squashed by just tickling all the pleasure centers and distracting us, versus it gets squashed through a authoritarian, totalitarian government which monitors us all the time. Even though Orwell's 1984 might seem darker, Brave New World, to me, seems a bit more on target regarding where we are today. That is, the big issues of life, thinking and deeply pondering reality or one's own self-identity, is getting destroyed through all of our bread and circuses, as opposed to getting destroyed the other way. But even though you threw in those two dystopian novels early in the 20th century, I did put on my list, and I think it is actually the best one of dystopian novels, is Yevgeny Zamyatin's We, which was written in the 1920s in Russia, right about the time of the Russian Revolution. And We actually seem to have had an impact on either both 1984 and Brave New World. And We describes a kind of dark vision of where a communist philosophy, which was emerging in Russia, would lead in the future, where individuality is completely eradicated and the only thing that matters is the collective and no longer the I. And what Zamyatin does in that book is he describes a different kind of human mind than the kind of mind that us Westerners would identify with. The central character is kind of an alien consciousness, but an alien consciousness that you can get a handle on here, because he's a very mathematical, geometrical, objective kind of thinker. The whole novel is very, very fascinating. Strange in a way that even Brave New World and 1984 are not. I also included there in early 20th century classics, William Hope Hodgson's The Nightland, which goes out millions of years in the future of the earth, and Lawrence Manning's The Man Who Awoke, which in some ways is similar to Last and First Men, but it speculates on the future evolution of humanity. But those two novels are also very, very good, written back in the 1920s and 30s, and philosophically deep. All right.
It's just so interesting. You're so knowledgeable about these things, to put it very, very mildly, Tom. Just actually a point on philosophy. How do we create a good future for all of us?
Yes. Okay. My general argument on creating the good future, this is my most basic general argument. The most important thing we need to do is not so much to focus, and I'm not being anti-technological, but not to focus on our physical and technological reality, but rather to focus on our conscious and psychological reality. And that is that we need to purposively evolve our consciousness. That's key to a good future, or a better reality than we have today. And in particular, I think we need to cultivate and develop our consciousness of the future, get out of this narrow present-focused mentality we have, and we need to develop in all of us the capacity of wisdom. Now, it might seem strange me saying this, but I think science fiction definitely would contribute into the evolution of our consciousness, the evolution of our wisdom, and obviously would contribute into being attuned to and informed by science fiction. It would contribute into our heightened future consciousness. That's my general message. And I think science fiction does a very good job of heightening the possibilities that we could be aware of as strange possibilities and perspectives on our consciousness and our consciousness of the future. And as I mentioned a little bit earlier, Stapleton and many other writers too, down on the list I have people like contemporary writers like Greg Bear and Queen of Angels, and which is about a 1990 novel, and Greg Egan with Diaspora, which is around 2000. Science fiction writers who look at the future evolution of the human mind and human consciousness, and not just simply look at the future of technology and space exploration. That's a main message in that comes out of the Center for Future Consciousness.
Okay. So interesting. And you're making, again, a point there about sort of, you know, linking this to what was going around at the time. So, you know, a lot of the people you've spoken about so far, if you take that sort of that slice of history between roughly, let's say, 1850, 1950, so, you're kicking off with, Marx and Engels' Communist Manifesto. I actually walked past the pub only yesterday where they wrote the Communist Manifesto in Soho in London, upstairs. You then go past like Darwin, you got Nietzsche, obviously, you mentioned H.G. Wells. Then you're saying, so you then moving forward, you've got the October Revolution kicking off. You then, in terms of futurist narratives, you have, who I know you mentioned last time, Lang, Metropolis, the idea of evil robots, linking into your point about all things sort of tech related, and then past Huxley, past the Great Depression, Roosevelt, up to Orwell, and then indeed then on to Khan and the Rand Corporation. But
Now as I'm following your historical narrative there, in moving up through the 1940s and 1950s, we have Robert Heinlein and Isaac Asimov, who wrote future histories. Heinlein was the most influential science fiction writer of the 40s and wrote a very expansive history of the future. Asimov wrote his Foundation series in the 1940s, in which he envisioned a scientist who, in the future, who could predict the future, and in the Foundation series. Asimov also wrote a great number of novels and stories about robots. People are familiar with the series I, Robot, but I found Asimov's The Caves of Steel, which was about a robot detective, probably the most interesting of the robot novels and stories that he wrote. What I wanted to mention in regards to robots, and you also brought up Lang with Metropolis and the evil robot in there, is people presently in our contemporary times are rather concerned about the dangerous possibilities of the evolution of artificial intelligence and of non-biological intelligence somehow gaining control of human reality and surpassing us. Well, I think that the best robot novel ever written was actually written back in the late 1940s by Jack Williamson, who was a top-notch science fiction writer for many, many decades. His novel, The Humanoids, in which we do create robots which are super intelligent, and we give them as their prime directive to serve and protect humanity so they will be good, ethically good, and that's something people are presently worried about. But the robots take that directive very literally, and in the end, humanity becomes entrapped in protective cages because the robots decide that we are not good judges as what is best for us. So they become controlling, powerful, super intelligent, authoritarian parents. And it's a great novel. And so when we think about as we're evolving artificial intelligence and evolving robots and worried about they might destroy us or conquer us or eliminate us, it might be a worse scenario that they really develop in order to protect us. And they go to the point of just totally eradicating our freedom and our individuality. And some people might say that's not such a bad thing anyway, but still, the humanoids is a great example of that nightmarish scenario carried to the extreme, which was written back in the 1940s. Now, we're about a half hour into this, and I want to make sure I just highlight some things on the list. I wanted to mention just sort of as a general theme that runs through my list. You know, we have lots of very good novels about the future, which involve aliens. We have another group of novels that involve outer space. And as I mentioned, we have that a group of novels involving technology, robot. With the alien topic, aliens in the future, I want to mention at the beginning here that, of course, if you read any science fiction or watch any science fiction, you know that science fiction often gets into aliens. It's a common theme, and it's been that way ever since the War of the Worlds, at least. Okay, what we need to see with that theme is that if indeed we were to make contact with alien intelligences, if that really were to happen, that would probably be the most dramatic and powerful and significant event in the entire history of humanity. It would totally transform our society, and not necessarily that they would conquer us, but rather that they would be of a different mentality, of a different kind of way of life, that would be such a mental jolt to our present sense of reality. Of course, we can envision, you know, the dangerous bug-eyed monsters who try to blow us up, but that's not what I'm talking about here.
Yeah.
I'm talking about our consciousness, our minds being unsettled by a different kind of intelligence than us, that even if they weren't more advanced, would just be different, and that would be just a jolt. Under alien futures, and I'm just going to rattle these off because I think they're very good ones, Abraham Merritt, The Metal Monster, written back in the 1930s, which is a very fascinating vision of a alien intelligence that is a self-organizing colossal mind made up out of trillions of individual metallic parts that can form into all different configurations. A very imaginative vision. Sherry Tepper's Grass, which is more recent, where humans have romantic relationships with aliens. Adrian Tchaikovsky's Children of Time, where he envisions a high-tech alien civilization made up out of intelligent spiders. Very good novel. Very good. One of the best novels in science fiction in the last 10, 15 years. China Meville's Embassy Town, where the issue is, can we really meaningfully communicate with an alien mind? And Jeff Vandermeer's Annihilation, which they made into an awful movie, but the novel was very good in terms of the mystery of alien intelligence. So aliens could, in fact, and people do believe this, in some time in the future, make contact with this alien intelligence. And it's a good mental exercise to envision what different kinds of alien intelligences or alien civilizations could exist, possibly exist, and to stretch our minds in that regard. And those are some very good novels about aliens. I wanted to mention them.
And then you move on to, I think, a very different take on it, the idea of transcendent, poignant futures.
Yes, I have two there. These are written back in the 1950s, roughly, 40s and 50s. Clifford Simak's City and Walter Miller's A Canticle for Leibowitz. A Canticle for Leibowitz is generally considered, when you look at different people's votes on this, one of the 10 best science fiction novels ever written. And it's a religious science fiction novel. And it is about post-World War III and about an order of monks who live in this monastery out in the deserts of Utah. It is a very emotionally and philosophically fascinating story about humanity trying to recreate civilization with a certain amount of comedy thrown in. And we get all the way back up to an advanced civilization 2,000 years in the future. And we just start the whole damn thing over again with another one. And so in the end, I won't tell you what happens in the end, but it's a very moving story and philosophically interesting story. Clifford Simak's City contains in it, in fact, I mentioned before about robots, contains one of the most interestingly envisioned robots in science fiction, Jenkins, and City chronicles the future of humanity up to the point where humanity ends up leaving the Earth, and the whole story is told from the perspective of verbally intelligent dogs.
Excellent.
It is a real trip, but it's very moving when it's all over, when you finally get to the end of it. And I say they're poignant because they're two novels that I read that are the kinds of novels you wish they didn't end. You develop such a strong identification with the scenarios in them, the characters, and when they come to an end, you wish there was more. And those are two of my all-time favorite science fiction novels written in the late 40s up through the late 1950s. Outer Space I had mentioned, and I think maybe I'll say a couple things about outer space novels, because that's another classic theme in science fiction, going to outer space, adventures in outer space. And I mentioned here, back from the 1930s and 40s, Doc Smith's The Skylark series and the Chronicle Lensman series. And I mentioned those because those were the first great space operas. They're the inspiration for Star Wars. That's where the Star Wars mentality begins. And to some degree, the Star Trek mentality begins. And they're these incredibly vast and expansive stories of battles in outer space and tons of different aliens and gigantic spaceships and moving past the speed of light and all the things we associate with contemporary outer space novels about the future. And they're two, and there's actually, I think, 10 of them altogether. Doc Smith, fascinatingly, had a PhD in chemistry and worked for a company that made children's cereal. And on the side, he wrote these incredible space operas, stories of outer space adventure. And I included them because anybody who wants to get a sense of the heritage of all of our current images about outer space travel, you got to read Doc Smith, at least some of his novels.
Also, let's jump in there and say, again, I think we mentioned this previously, that, you know, one can never talk about outer space without mentioning Arthur C. Clarke. And on a personal note, it's bizarre that when I was a teenager, I was living down in the west of England in Somerset. And oddly enough, Arthur C. Clarke's brother was a farmer in the village where I was living, whereas Arthur C. Clarke, I think, was living in Sri Lanka at the time. And he'd come back occasionally, gave me a couple of his books. So, you know, I met the great man when I was about sort of 15, 16. But anyway, back to Outer Space and Doc Smith and those like Larry Niven, etc.
Yeah, and Larry Niven's a great vision of a ring world, which is actually kind of an evolution off of an idea from Olaf Stapleton's Star Maker. in which he envisioned a giant constructive ring that was millions and millions of miles across, constructed by aliens, discovered by humans. Mm. I have on here a superb novel of tens of thousands of years in the future, taking place across the Milky Way by the computer scientist, contemporary computer scientist, Vinod Vinge, who is the person responsible for the popularization of the idea of the technological singularity. And the title of that novel is A Fire Upon the Deep. And it's a, let's see, how do I describe A Fire Upon the Deep? It's a story where the setting is the entire Milky Way, in which some stupid humans let loose a computer virus that spreads across a galactic internet. And it's a tense novel in which, can we save collective technologies and civilizations of the entire galaxy by finding a way to defeat this future computer virus? There's a lot of other dimensions to it, one of which is that he has some of the greatest aliens, and I have him under here under space, but he also was very inventive with his aliens in A Fire Upon the Deep. I have Alistair Reynolds' Revelation Space, which is a fascinating take on why we don't see any indications of alien civilizations up there in outer space right now. You know, Fermi paradox. It's a very interesting answer to Fermi's paradox. Maybe there's something up there which is knocking off anybody who starts to develop space technology. I also have up there, which is a very good novel that people might be familiar with in terms of its a TV version. If you have watched The Expanse on TV, that is based on a series of novels by S.A. Corey, the first one, Leviathan Wakes. And that's a very good near future vision of humanity spreading through the solar system and encountering alien intelligence and the political, cultural, and social dimensions of what would human civilization be like if it had spread from just the Earth to Mars and the asteroid belt and further out. And Leviathan Wakes is as good a novel as The Expanse, the TV series, is. And I include that up there as, you know, a really good outer space novel. I also have up here as a illustration of a theme that I repeatedly emphasize in talking about science fiction, the theme of not just simply outer space, not simply robots or AI or aliens, but the future of everything. That science fiction is really about the future of everything, from the social, psychological, ethical, religious, to the technological, ecological, and scientific. And the example I give here of the future of everything is Dan Simmons' The Hyperion Cantos, which is four novels that were written back in starting in the late 1980s up through the first decade of the 21st century. Dan Simmons, I will always recommend Hyperion, the first novel in the series, to people who may have reservations about reading science fiction. And I recommend that novel because I think it will really educate somebody on how intricate, literary, philosophical, and amazingly imaginative a science fiction novel can be. Hyperion, modeled on Chaucer's Canterbury Tales. It involves the story of the second coming of Christ, who turns out to be a woman. It involves a grand inquisitor and a future Dalai Lama in a debate over the meaning of life. It involves the question of, would you sell your soul to the devil to achieve immortality, and a million other things besides. It is a very rich and intricate and super vivid in its language, vision of the future of humanity, 1,000 years roughly in the future. Very, very famous, and I think it's one of the best science fiction novels ever written. And it gets into outer space, it gets into AI. In fact, in the future, the Catholic Church kind of resurrects itself to a central position of power and gets into a unethical collusion with super AI intelligence, just lots of different things in that whole novel series. And I always recommend it to people as being top-notch in terms of overall quality of intelligence, imagination, and detail about the future.
Fantastic.
So Hyperion, yeah. So I just wanted to mention, because it sort of connects together in a way. If you look down on the list, you'll see something there called Cultural Futures, Future of Everything. There's a contemporary Irish science fiction writer, Ian MacDonald. Mm-hmm. Ian MacDonald, back in roughly the last, 15 years or so, has written three great science fiction novels in succession, all of which take place in different types of cultures, Earth cultures, aside from just simply Central Europe or the United States. The three novels are River of Gods, Brazil, and The Dervish House. Mm-hmm. River of Gods takes place in a future India. Brazil takes place in a future and past Brazil. And The Dervish House takes place in a future Istanbul. And I was really impressed by these three novels in terms of the intricacy of his visions of non-Western-like future cultures. And when we think about the future, you know, we tend to, if we're from Great Britain or Western Europe, the United States, we tend to get too cultural-centric on that mentality. Yep. And even though MacDonald is from Ireland, lives there, he does a really great job of envisioning these three Western-centric European civilizations in the future. And he weaves together these very vivid cultural visions with a lot of really strange and crazy technologies in the future. In River of Gods, before all is said and done, the Hindu gods become super AIs that move backwards in time. Brazil, we have alternate universes, and we have characters that jump between past, present, and future. And the Dervish House have this vision of Istanbul in which there are various artificial intelligences and robots trying to manipulate for control and criminal elements. And I recommend to people also, and they're challenging to read, but they're really good examples of contemporary science fiction dealing with alternate cultures. And then the last one I have up there, which a lot of people may be aware of, besides Ian MacDonald, is Shan Liu. And I'm pronouncing his name incorrectly. The great science fiction writer from China, who in Three Body Problem, which were written in the last 15 years or so, creates this very vivid image of past and contemporary China and Chinese technology, and throws it all together with alien intelligence and the aliens invading us from outer space. So I bring all of that up in part because even if going back to Wells and to Stapleton, science fiction has been powerfully and centrally influenced by English-speaking writers, yep, more contemporary times, visions of the future have gone beyond being Eurocentric, and writers on the future are coming out from all different parts of the world, writing science fiction in China, in India, writing about futures in Asia and other parts of the world. There's a strong element of science fiction visioning of futures going on in South America. I'm acknowledging I'm relatively ignorant, except for the fact that I'm aware of it being there and reading some of it. But there's a lot of science fiction and futures visioning going on across the globe and thinking about that thing.
Well, originally, obviously, we recently had the futurists meeting in Dubai, where obviously now they have the Museum of the Future. I thought it was really fascinating, and I'm aware that at the time we have left available to us, Tom, point about a Western stroke sort of European US view of the future. I think a lot of criticisms have been pointed towards, for instance, in a different sort of area, TED Talks, which tend to often perhaps give us a Silicon Valley view of the future, yeah, as opposed to a view from elsewhere. And notice also, and we mentioned this before, one of the names that you don't select, interestingly enough, is William Gibson. And I remember before you saying you have a particular reason why you're not such a Gibson fan. Yes.
I have not read anything by William Gibson yet. And it's not like I've read a lot, but I've read some stuff by him, including Neuromancer, that has really impressed me. His contemporaries, who started writing about the same time and are still going strong now and are older science fiction writers, Kim Stanley Robinson and Neal Stephenson, both of them impress me. I've told futurists that Robinson's book, The Ministry of the Future, which just came out a couple of years ago, is one science fiction book I would highly recommend that all futurists read. And that's an ecological, climate, environmental science fiction book, and it's very didactic and it's long, but it's a very sustained, utopian, filled with challenges and problems, vision for the future of the earth. I think it's an impressive piece of work, and it's stuck in my mind. I think Neal Stephenson's Seven Eves is a very imaginative, impressive book about the future of humanity, about outer space, and it's a classic, I don't even have it as a category up here, it's a classic science fiction disaster novel. Science fiction has gotten into, you know, global worldwide disasters throughout its entire history. What if a comet hits us? What if something else goes wrong where humanity and civilization gets wiped out or almost wiped out? Seven Eves, it starts with the moon blowing up. And you could imagine the havoc that wreaks on humanity by having the moon blow up. And it's a very, very good novel. A very, very imaginative. Yes, I don't have anything up here by William Gibson, but I do have Robinson. I do have Neal Stephenson. And also I include in the same cluster, because he's still writing and started around the same time, I include Stephen Baxter, who is out of England and wrote really great cosmic science fiction that's comparable in ways to Olaf Stapleton. His vacuum diagrams and the time ships. And in fact, as one way to wind things up, well, there's many ways to wind things up. We all, of course, are familiar to some degree with Wells' The Time Machine. Well, 100 years after the anniversary of the publication of The Time Machine, Stephen Baxter wrote the sequel to The Time Machine, the title of which is The Time Ships. And The Time Ships begins where The Time Machine ends and follows the further adventures of the time traveler. And in terms of a vision of the future, which is very sophisticated scientifically and very philosophically deep, bringing quantum physics and the many worlds theory of the universe in. The Time Ships is an amazing piece of intellectual imagination and stimulation. Really great novel that he wrote on the anniversary for the Time Machine. So there's lots of good, I think, very good contemporary science fiction writers. I didn't put it up here, and I should just throw this in as a bit of an aside before we end, is that I'm working on my last webinar in my Evolution of Science Fiction webinar series. And it deals with science fiction literature of the last decade. And something that I noticed as I've been researching it and reading books and putting the webinar together is that the bulk of science fiction novels that have won Best Novel of the Year through either Hugo's, Nebula's, Locus, or British Science Fiction Awards, the bulk of the authors by far have been women. Women have achieved a dominance, but at least an equal level of influence in science fiction and in science fiction visions of the future. I didn't really get into that, and that would almost be another topic, is growing feminine voice of women in evolution of science fiction. I have up there Sherry Tepper, but I didn't really get in discussing Ursula Le Guin and many other contemporary women science fiction writers too.
Yeah, which I know you have many of in your epic list. And certainly, hopefully we will have a future conversation. You can also take us through your another of your epic lists in terms of your all-time best science fiction movies, which, again, I think is absolutely fantastic. Perhaps I'll just finish with asking you just one question, Tom, and it's a sort of philosophical one, really, in terms of the concept of long-termism and sort of, yeah. I think, effective altruism, which I think links right back to the Institute's perspective from the point of view of, you know, how do we create a good future for all of us? But what do we owe the future?
What do we owe the future? You know, I probably wouldn't use that form of expression. I would more likely say something like this. When we think about how we live our lives, we not only have to consider our relative immediate here and now and doing the best by that, but we equally have to consider the vast expanse of space and time, which includes the future, and where is what we're doing today going to lead in the long run? I wouldn't use the word "oh," but I would say that you can't just simply live for the benefit of what is occurring right now or over the next 5 or 10 years. You need to be like Spinoza, the philosopher, and stand back and view reality through what he said, the eyes of eternity, which is what Stapleton tried to do in his way. That is to stand back and think about not just this right in front of us, but the big picture and where this is going and where could it go in the long run. What distinguishes us from the rest of the animal kingdom, as far as we know, we could be wrong about this, but what distinguishes us is that we can look out to vast distances in space and time and try to understand that. So what do we owe the future? Well, I think we owe ourselves taking a big picture view of the future, of not just simply creating a good present, but creating and envisioning what a far future, a good positive far future would be like too. So maybe that's the way I would answer it, you know? It's putting it in a slightly different language.
No, thank you. Absolutely superb. As I say, that Our astonishing capacity to imagine the future is key to our species' ingenuity and culture, as the invention of tomorrow has it. Well, look, Tom, it's been absolutely fascinating talking with you again. Thank you so much for your time. For everyone interested, as I'm sure you all are, you can track him down at the centerforfutureconsciousness.com. But all I'd say is to Tom Lombardo, PhD, director at the Center for Future Consciousness, thank you very much indeed.
Yeah, and thank you, Sean. Yes.
Thanks for listening to The New Abnormal. This series is brought to you in partnership with the Copenhagen Institute for Future Studies, which helps clients become futures ready. Just so you know, the issues discussed in these podcasts also link to my speeches. Check out seanpeterc.com for more info. Please listen to previous conversations in this series with many other fascinating guests. But till next time, goodbye.